You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. I don't even know what happened to hour number one. I mean, like, where did it go? But yeah, welcome to hour number two here on a Meatloaf Monday. And I'm in dipper number one right now talking about, I just called it states' rights. And what I'm basically saying is a message that I've been trying to reemphasize over and over again for the last 3.5 years is that what happens in your state capital sometimes has more of an impact on your life than what happens in D.C., literally. I mean, the things that they pass or don't pass or try to pass in terms of legislation at the state level can dramatically impact your day-to-day. Well, there's no greater friend than that here in Alabama than the Alabama Policy Institute, and you can find them at alabamapolicy.org. I was proud to be on staff there for a number of years, still listed as a distinguished fellow, which is just great for my reputation. But the president of the Alabama Policy Institute, doing good work in that regard, is my friend Stephanie Smith, and she's on the phone. President Stephanie Smith, how are you doing?
I'm going to start making my children address me that way, see how it goes.
All 17 of them, right? That's great. You got. By the way, I love seeing pictures of y'all on social media. You got such a big family, the Thanksgivings and all that kind of stuff. You guys are doing well?
The holidays are super busy but really fun around here. So we're trying to soak it up because we have so many kids, we realize how fast it goes. So we're really trying to soak it up when we still have little ones at home, and yeah, we're just really excited about the holidays.
I've got a new op-ed that came out. It's a total aside here. I'm chasing a rabbit with you, but I got a new op-ed that came out today, and I talk about, you know, sometimes I'm a really bad Christmas shopper, but I point out the fact that you know, we're empty nesters, and now we, you know, share time with the in-laws, and we know it, and it's fine, but it just it changes the dynamic, and I value the days past even more so.
Yeah. Well, so we're trying to soak it up and learn from your mistakes.
Okay. There's a lot of people that say that about a lot of things I've done. So, let's talk about trying to learn from mistakes. So you guys, did not make a mistake last year. You guys had what you called your 2024 blueprint for Alabama, which was, you know, the legislative agenda, and some great stuff came out of that, that actually was enacted into law. In other words, you guys were advocating for stuff that really did happen and make a difference. Congrats again on that, but you're coming up. I mean, I know this morning I was looking for it and realized it's not even out yet. The blueprint for 2025. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. We're putting the finishing touches on it right now. So last year, I mean, I looked around at, we went around the table. We didn't have a vote, but we had a discussion about, you know, kind of what we were going to do as far as a policy agenda. And I was like, you know, guys, if we're not going to go big, I'm not sure why we're here. Let's just go for it. We're going to put 30 issues on the table that the Alabama legislature ought to do if we're going to claim to be the most conservative legislature in the nation. And so we got 25 of those discussed, and 17 of them we were successful on. Yeah. And so, frankly, I didn't think we would do that well. It was fantastic. We had a lot of buy-in from leadership and from legislators and the governor on a few issues, the lieutenant governor on a bunch of issues, the secretary of state. And so we had a lot of buy-in, and it wasn't obviously just us, but more of us participating well in the process. And so then, you know, we look up and we're like, okay, now we got to do it again. So here we are. We're addressing the exact same issues from last year that we didn't check the box to get to the finish line on. Several of those have to do with our strong families tenet, because there were a bunch of those bills that made it all the way to the last day and then got left, just left on the table on the last day when they tried to pull the gambling cat out of the hat on that last day.
Yeah.
So, So we're redoing the ones that we didn't get whole cloth last year, and then we're adding some new things, mainly on the regulatory side and transparency side of government.
So if you look at it, I mean, first of all, you guys, I know that the API stands for the three pillars: free markets, limited government, strong families. So we can always anticipate they'll fall within the rubric of those things.
That's right.
But are there things that you're are some of it? Because I haven't seen it yet. Are there some of the things like you're saying we need to do this, or are you going to have some that you're saying we will oppose this because you can see something coming?
Yeah, there's some offense and there's some defense. You know, I mean, stopping gambling expansion is always on our list, has been since you were doing this on a daily basis, has been for 35 years. Stopping the, quote, public-private partnership, which is really Medicaid expansion, is one of those stopping things.
Yeah.
A lot of them are offense. A lot of them are things like promoting history and civics education, pregnancy resource center tax credits, restrict abortion-inducing drugs, protection of minors on the internet, the definitions of women and protecting of girls' spaces. And then there are some things, you know, kind of in the free market and limited government area. We would like to require government entities to have to live stream their meetings so that the people of Alabama can actually see what's happening in their government on every level.
That cracks me up because there are some of these meetings that if people saw what was going on, they would go, there's no way that's not a Seinfeld episode. What is happening right now?
Well, who needs term limits when you have live streams? You know what I'm saying? The overtime tax elimination is being sunsetted. And so there's a kind of a budgetary / tax cut fight on that, in that area. And then, you know, some things that we've been talking about for years that we just have not gotten over the finish line: certificate of need, occupational licensing reform. And then we're getting into the nitty gritty on a couple of things, health freedom wise, a right to try bill that you might recall. There was a right to try bill that came through Alabama and has been effective, but it needs to be expanded to make sure that people at the end of their life have the ability to try whatever, you know, drug concoction they need to make a last-ditch effort at life, because we're pro-life, you know, all the way until death. And so things like that. And then, you know, some other things that I know you'll be excited about is, you know, requiring transparency in federal funding and federal grants.
Yes.
and then this one is one that it just sticks in my craw, and it'll speak to you as well, which is, you know, the Alabama Constitution is the longest in the world. It's been, amended 977 times. But when we vote on those constitutional amendments, it is very difficult for someone without a law degree or someone who doesn't read these things on a daily basis like we do to understand what it is they're voting on. And so trying to just make that a more practical process and make the language plain and make it an up or down. And so if you're going to change if you want to change the Constitution in whatever capacity it is, it's a yes. If you don't want to change it, it's a no. Because sometimes they throw double negatives in there. It's just very convoluted. And people, if we're going to have that kind of amendment process, let's let people understand what they're voting for.
Let people understand what they're voting for. Can I have some applause on that, please? I mean, that's like good. All right. So, by the way, I do have a law degree. I was a state senator, and I worked at the Policy Institute, and I can't friggin' read some of those things when they come out. And I have people that literally will call me from the voting booth going, "Hey, Phil, I'm in the voting booth.
I know.
I don't know what this means." And I'll go, "I don't either." But, yeah.
Well, your default is probably my default, which is, if I don't understand it, I vote no.
There you go.
But it's also one of those things. It just shouldn't be that way. You know, if we're gonna have that type of process, then it should be straightforward. And, you know, it should be in language that people, you know, understand. And then we're also talking about restricting, again, the expanded public sector payroll deduction ban that is not being heeded. Ethics reform, we'll see how that goes. And then something that we're getting involved in that we usually don't, is this prosecution of child predators and extending the statute of limitations for child abuse. There are just too many children in our society right now, and it's a pox on us. It's a shame that we've allowed our culture to get this way, but we've got to figure out ways to protect children from the insanity, whether or not that's, you know, the gender kind of things that are going on or actual sexual abuse or actual child abuse. And so we need to be able to protect kids from those things. And kids who have endured that should be supported. And, you know, they should be able to confront their abusers later in life.
So we got about a minute for the break. On the current legislative agenda, the Blueprint 2025 that you're finishing it right now, do you have like a top three? I mean, it's hard to rank because I know everything, you'd like to get everything done, but is there anything you're looking at going, well, that's the one right there, man. Is there anything that stands out?
I really would like to see them hold the line on Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
That's just something from a budgetary standpoint that could literally bankrupt the general fund pretty quickly.
Yep.
And it's just not, we're at a point where it's just not necessary. Because we are taking care of people who are disabled, people who are caregivers for the elderly or for the young, you know, people who can't work or have a capacity level that's lower than others. And so we're talking about people who, for the most part, are you know, able to work. They're just not willing to work.
Yeah.
And I'm not willing to bankrupt the general fund of the state for folks who are not willing to work.
Not for the rural hospitals. You're trying to shut down healthcare as we know it. It's just unreal.
Well, it's interesting because this public-private partnership that they're talking about has literally never worked in any of the states where it has been tried. Now, it's worked for the private part of that partnership because they get federal money that is guaranteed by the state. But from a public perspective, from a public policy perspective, That's not a win-win. That's a fail-fail. And here's the other thing. We just elected Donald Trump to be president, and we don't really know how he's going to handle the Medicaid program.
Yeah,
great point. So, you know, to run in quickly in February and pass something not knowing how a Trump administration is going to handle that big entitlement program, I think is just an unwise course of action.
Yeah, I mean, I think that DOGE, you know, the Department of Government Efficiency, may come in and say something. But
No, there's no telling what those guys will say.
I look forward to it, to be honest. Hey, listen.
I know, me too.
Steph, we got to take a break. When we come back, I'd like to spend a few minutes to wrap up talking about what's crossing state lines. Like, what can we do that somebody else is already doing, or vice versa? What are they modeling after? All that to say, there's a lot of folks out there doing good things in other states, and I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Absolutely.
All right, we're taking a break. JP, move us out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're with Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute talking about, you know, just how important it is to pay attention at what goes on in your own state capital. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, going right back to the phones for a few minutes with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. Steph, I was telling the audience earlier before you came on that not only the importance of paying attention to what happens in their state capitals, but that, you know, a resource for Alabama would be y'all, the Alabama Policy Institute, but that there's API-type entities in every state through the State Policy Network and resourcing through the Family Resource Council and all that. So are there things out there right now that you see trending that are, a lot of times we used to call it model legislation, where it may be working in one state, other states pick it up, things that are being passed around through the network? What are you seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, being part of the State Policy Network and kind of a smaller group of CEOs has been really beneficial, frankly, for API in general, and also for me. You know, I'm coming up on 2 years of leading API, and they have been kind of my phone-a-friend.
Yeah.
All of those folks who have been doing this for years and decades and have so much experience. and routinely, you know, when we're in the office, we start batting around an idea. My question is always, okay, what other states have done this? Whatever states have tried it and failed, and why? And you know, how can we copy the good things and toss the bad things that other people have already tried? And so one of the things that is going to be, you know, on the blueprint is called the RAINS Act. And that's something that you may have heard of on the federal level. It's been something that's been batted around there. But it really was successful under Scott Walker. If you remember Scott Walker from Wisconsin, he championed this when he was governor. And then some of the guys who worked for him and actually helped write this legislation run an organization now that's Nespian Group. And I've been working back and forth with them. And what it is what you mentioned, talking about Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk saying all of the things that we've been saying for decades, you know, things like limited government increases freedom. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've heard that. And so what this kind of legislation tackles is the idea that there is a bureaucratic state. I mean, there is a swamp in D.C., there is no question, but there's a bureaucratic state in operation in Montgomery and in every state capital as well. And so this piece of legislation addresses that, and it reins in, which is called why it's called reins, it reins in the regulatory state and makes sure that bureaucrats who work for agencies can't write their own law. They've got to comply with the law. They are the ones who write the rules after the legislators legislate. And a lot of times they will write rules. There's not a lot of accountability, not a lot of transparency in the process. And they'll write rules that cost millions of dollars, and nobody knows how much that's costing, and there's no oversight to it. So that's one of the things that we're working on and we're modeling after. Wisconsin's law, and then also Florida has enacted a RAINS law and then just updated it last year. And so, you know, I mean, talk about not reinventing the wheel. If you want to look and see where good conservative governance is coming from, just get on, you know, Ron DeSantis' Twitter feed and follow along.
That's
so
exactly right.
That's one of those things that we're doing, especially as policy people, because he definitely is taking the lead on the conservative policy side, especially as a state governor.
Well, that's huge, and I totally agree. And by the way, we're pretty much out of time, but the reality is that what you guys are doing, there's nothing new under the sun. There may be something you've done that somebody else can model, or something someone else has done that we can grab hold of and make our own. But every state has to have good, solid, conservative fighters, warriors, if you will, who are getting in the mix and doing this stuff to make it all happen. Steph, we really appreciate you. Thanks for the work you're doing. And I look forward to seeing the blueprint when it comes out.
I'll send it to you as soon as I see it.
Outstanding. All right, Stephanie Smith, Alabama Policy Institute, and Merry Christmas. All right, that's great. That was perfect timing. Listen, go check them out, alabamapolicy.org. They don't pay me to say that. I'm just telling you that's a resource for you, and I know this ruffian audience, you guys might care about it. All right, coming back, Dipper number two, The Heavy Hand. I'll tell you more about that when we get back.